Blog Talk Radio.
The NAWC, for over 50 months, the revolutionary force in talk entertainment.
The North American Wrestling Connection, bringing you great wrestling discussion since 2007. Sanctioned by...
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Pat!
How about Madison last week? Had her big day in the sun, had the expensive evening gown, had the, what's the, tuxedo plaid?
Yeah, some of those fancy fellows.
Yeah, in the tuxes.
Did like kind of like a Marilyn Monroe tux. Excuse me, Marilyn Monroe tux.
There it is. It's only January, and there's the Freudian slip of the year.
Oh, boy.
That one's tremendous.
All right, well, front end. Madison Rayne.
You got the title locked up for 2011, partner.
Serena, take yourself in. Please bring me in here. Oh, boy.
Oh no. Now it's when it gets entertaining.
Oh, dear me. Wow.
So, ladies and gentlemen, happy non-PG New Year from the North American
Wrestling.
Yay! My name is Heyman, and as you can hear, we have a bunch of nonsense here in the background. I'll start with our loudmouth on the side of the Big Apple, Mr. Jason Block.
Wow! I'm going to stay away from that and actually go PG and actually say something really nice about John Cena before we even start. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, absolutely. It was announced this week that the Make-A-Wish Airline Miles campaign raised 4.2 million donated miles to help children who are unfortunately terminally ill or very ill fulfill their wishes, including 1 million Delta Sky miles of their own. And if you still haven't thought about it, go do it. That's a great campaign. Good on you, John Cena. Good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff.
Round of applause.
And secondly, in another part of New York, our exquisite sound man who provided us with that non-PG intro, Mr. Jim Williams.
One of these days, we'll talk. I don't know how I'm from New York when I'm from South Jersey, but that's okay.
Oh, that is an insult. Apologies, sir.
That's okay. No, it's okay. I'm about as far away from New York as you can get in terms of things. No, it's great to be here. Happy New Year to one and all, including our loyal listeners and those in the chat. And all I have to say is I hope I don't get DFA'd like I saw some certain wrestlers getting DFA'd since last we talked.
Oh, thank you. We will
get
that. Hey, who button is that?
Sorry?
That's fine. We'll just slip. I'll just point my way west into the Indianapolis area with our newest addition to the North American Wrestling Connection, a dear friend of mine from Insanity Pro Wrestling, Mr. Andy Storm.
Yay. What's going on, guys?
Hey, thank you for allowing me on the show, Nikki. It's it's gonna be great to join you guys. And let's just get this good thing going.
All right, because we do have a lot to cover, because we did not do a show on Christmas Eve, nor did we do a show on New Year's Eve. I wasn't going to bog anybody down with that, but damn it, too much happened.
You ain't kidding.
We had injuries, we had turns, we had defections, we had dogs. No, I'm not even going to go into that one.
We got
stuff coming back. We got stuff going away. Slow down, WWE. I've only got an hour to talk about this.
It's supposed to be the holidays. Everybody else is taking the off for the wrestling industry. Not so much.
Nope.
And the main ones that are burning some midnight oil is the law department. And I think, Jason, you're probably better equipped to discuss this than I am.
We have, I think, about three or four different legal stories that happened over the last 2 weeks. The biggest one happens to be with one Jeffrey Nero Hardy. It has been pretty much announced that he is going to plead guilty to the charge that he is being accused of. It was reported in the AP. The attorney's office has said he's going to plead guilty, and we don't know if he's going to serve jail time, if he's going to do probation, but that's huge for both him and for TNA. What do you think, guys?
Well, one of the things that I worry about... No, I'm sorry, Andy. Go ahead.
No problem. Well, one actually something I was kind of worried about is TNA is going to have this image now that they can... that they'll basically just allow anybody to be on their program no matter what, you know, kind of legal problems they may be in. And this could actually cause big problems with their title picture. You know, if Hardy does end up going to jail, you know, how they're going to write that in with, you know, Hardy vacating the title, if they're going to bring back the original heavyweight title and get rid of whatever he's got now, or, you know, whatever's going to go on there. And that's going to cause a big problem for the fans with continuity, and they're probably not going to want to watch it.
I think they've kind of hedged their bets in some respects. We have Eric Young parading around with an NWA title belt, claiming that he's the true TNA champion. I figured that Jeff Hardy is going to drop the belt at Genesis just in case. And one thing that I still haven't gotten a clarification on is which charge is Jeff Hardy actually pleading guilty to? Is it possession with intent to distribute, the trafficking charge, which carries mandatory jail time in the Carolinas? There's a lot at stake here, and yeah, this is going to not only tarnish TNA's image, but this is going to be another kick in the balls to the wrestling industry.
Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it in my mind. It's just, this kind of stuff happens, if this happened in another organization, I'm not even saying WWE, but another organization, they would cut ties with them immediately. They're kind of standing by him, sort of, at this point, which is different.
Now, according to the Charlotte Observer, they said that he's going to plead guilty to drug charges. They don't say what ones. I'm looking at the Charlotte Observer as of December 27th. So, bad news there. Jeff, just get well. Matt, you do the same. The second one was one, we go to your neck of the woods, Mr. Williams. South Jersey's own Nick Gage, I believe his name is.
Yes, if I may say, a story reported a week before the news sites got it, but WrestleChat.net, my buddy Brett Clendaniel was on this from day one. Want to give him props on it.
So, okay. So tell us what happened.
Essentially, here comes Nick Gage, and he robs a bank. Now, when you rob a bank, you may want to go for a big payday. God knows how many times. He robbed $3,000. $3,000. And, of course, the security cam catches him in plain sight. He's not wearing a mask. He's not wearing his, quote-unquote, trademark bandana. And as soon as pictures are released, everybody's like, holy crap, this is Nick Gage. This has got to be Nick Gage. And they were searching for him, and about a week later they caught him, arrested him. Here's the funny thing, though. Funny and kind of sick, too. From what I'm being told, there are groups of fans trying to raise money to, you know, get him out, as it were, to pay any fines he has to, you know, a bail he has to pay, which, why would you want to do that? I don't know. But the whole Nick Gage thing is crazy.
Yeah, that story just sort of, like, was a little nuts.
Only in
now,
South Jersey?
Gage was known, was a guy who worked regularly over in CZW in South Philly. So I've got a couple of friends that work CZW. Andy and I both know Sammy Callahan, and Sweet Lou Roberts has gone out there at least to watch. I know he doesn't do a whole lot of work anymore. I've heard stories that when Gage walked up to the teller window with his note, the note actually said, "I'm Nick fucking Gage." I knew about the big dance thing. I was also told, though, he turned himself in, not that he was caught. So
okay, you know, yeah. The police found that he turned himself in. That's, yeah, well, yeah.
It's semantics, I realize. But this guy needs to be slapped around a little bit, no offense. He'd also gone out to say that he wasn't going to get caught, but doofus, put your mask on if you're going to go rob a bank.
Not that we can do such things.
Not
DTR
at
care.
All.
Andy, I'm going to expose you to one of the silliest things on the show. Nick Gage, you fail.
Whoa! He is not at Space Mountain by any means.
No. But the third story was one of the weirdest ones, and this one broke this week. A lawsuit which was picked up by TMZ and others claims that a 18-year-old kid named Ronald Basham filed a lawsuit against the WWE for leg injuries he suffered 11 years ago at an event when the Rock and Triple H match spilled into the crowd. Well, TMZ is reporting that in addition to playing high school football, this guy on his Facebook page posted pictures of himself not only stock car racing, but crashing a car into a wall. And after lawsuits filed, the pics were gone. And the lawyer said he has a long medical history with knee problems, and as far as I know, his knee was never injured from racing cars. So, yeah, that's the end of the legal briefs. I don't think WWE is going to sweat that lawsuit too much.
Yeah.
Nah, yeah.
Good grief, where's Doug Llewellyn when we need him? Good grief.
I know. I mean, but the biggest one was the Jeff Hardy story. I mean, that's a big surprise, and we'll see what happens. I believe it's going to be the 25th, right? I believe late this month.
Sounds about right.
The other thing that kind of came out of the Jeff Hardy story was the fact that it was the defense that was calling for all these continuances. It was Jeff Hardy's side, which means that, you know, essentially he was trapped and they were trying to find a way out of it. But if he at least steps up and tries to plea bargain, you know, maybe he won't serve any jail time. But again, if they get him on trafficking, he's going to have to sit behind bars for a little bit and say hey to nails for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, okay. Chat room confirms for me. Thank you, Steph Boy. January 20th is Jeff Hardy's next day in court. So we will actually be able to report on this. Since our show, we will have a show on the 21st.
Yes, stay with NAWC for continuing court coverage. Yes.
At least that's the hope. Anyway.
Yes.
So we've gotten all the serious crap out of the way.
Yeah, most of it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We can go to programming. We can go to Monday Night Raw. We can go to... No, let's go to an interesting little string of events that started with a hip pointer on Superman.
Superman had a little bit of kryptonite, yes.
Yes.
Superman found some kryptonite in the wasteland. Wow, that's deep.
Yes. Thank you.
Well played.
But apparently, seen that suffered a hit pointer when he landed incorrectly when Barrett hit him with the wasteland. It might have led to some instances in TLC, including the humiliation combo that Barrett was subjected to in the chairs match, such as his free ride down the ramp and the closing spot where he's stuck under a scaffold and then buried under another 2 dozen chairs.
I believe that happened before the injury.
The injury that he got was sustained at a house show. I think it was like the week after the TLC pay-per-view.
Right. So maybe the separation was already in place, but the fact that Barrett was not shown, well, there was a Nexus Free Raw after TLC, and Superman had gone out and vanquished the Nexus.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't keep a good faction down, right?
Right, of course.
I think with CM Punk being the self-proclaimed leader of Nexus now, I honestly think that he's going to take them to a little bit of a higher position, but this also could open up for even more for maybe David Otunga to come in with, you know, his problems with you know, power and people having power over him. They could open up, you know, just another storyline that they could go through with if they feel like Nexus is starting to die out.
David Otunga would only be happy with one person being the leader of Nexus. Okay, two people. Him or his wife. That's about it.
Yeah. And that could actually...
Go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say that could actually open up another storyline later on down the road, a power struggle between, you know, maybe Otunga and Punk and somehow bring back Barrett or not, you know, depending on how he's doing now on SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
What I found interesting is that Otunga seems very receptive so far to Punk being in charge. The fact that he was willing to use the ruse under new management, to which John Cena and myself and a lot of the audience assumed Otunga was speaking of himself. Because a couple people, you know, a couple think, oh, that was obvious. No, I had quite the disconnect until Punk sat down in the chair that he wanted to hit with. And then reached down and picked up the sleeve that I believe Slater dropped his?
I think it was Slater, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Wendy, yeah.
So, and then when he contemplated it, I said, no way. And sure enough, as it went up his arm, the crowd had it was a surprisingly mixed reaction. So this is a good thing. I think this is a very good thing for the Nexus. They needed another strong force in charge. I don't think Barrett was an inept leader, but he was running out of things to try.
Certainly going to help sell some merch, that's for sure.
Yeah. And I will also say this. Justin Gabriel, you should have learned your cue.
we could almost take this like when Paul London was grinning the night that the limo blew up when Vince McMahon walked out of the arena. We could use that. Maybe Otunga isn't the one that's going to rebel. Maybe it'll stick. Gabriel's grown people, so, you know, who knows? Maybe he'll strike out on his own.
Possibly.
But that's all right. It's still interesting. It's still intriguing. And, yeah, I'm going to keep on watching because now we're actually going to see Cena get another mud hole stomped into him. I kind of like that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And just one other thing. The Punk promos have been so good.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, it's about as perfect a mix as you can get. Unfortunately, Barrett's the victim of it, in a way.
Kind of, sort of. I mean, he's going back to Nikki's point, it's not that he's been an inept leader. That's not the problem at all. He has been an excellent leader, and he's great on the mic. And obviously, he's being groomed for something bigger. I think that's apparent. I think something bigger's coming for him, and something bigger may be coming sooner than later. You never know.
That's why I'm calling wait and see when it comes to Barrett's SmackDown run. He just, because he crashed SmackDown tonight, beat up the Big Show. I mean, you know, you want to make a splash, go pick on the biggest dog in the pen.
Absolutely.
So now Big Show has something new that doesn't involve Dash and Cody Rhodes, and the fact that he wouldn't be going up against Drew McIntyre, since they're slowly turning him face. SmackDown was in need of skills.
Mm-hmm.
So what better place for him to break out on his own? And I think he'll be fine.
I would agree.
Wade's always been a strong singles competitor, probably stronger than most of the rest of Nexus. And I think, you know, this whatever this singles run is that he's going on in SmackDown, I think it's going to lead to big things for him. It, you know, we could see a possible Intercontinental title run, maybe a heavyweight championship, you know, fight or something. But I think, you know, I think what he's going through right now, he's got the goods to deliver. He's just got to deliver.
And who knows, maybe they'll finally give him the intro that they promised him back in NXT Season 1.
Yeah.
Sorry, had to be said.
Yeah, well said, though.
Well, obviously, yeah. I was going to say, honestly, think NXT since Season 1, it's kind of just been a big, you know, it's been a bust, honestly. I mean, they, you know, they had no plans for Cabal / Low Key when he was in. And honestly, I think that's going to be a silly mistake on the WWE's part for not trying to find anything for him. Because he, you know, he was a big name. The fans loved him. And he was a great talent in the ring, worked hard. You know, they could have came up with something. But I think WWE Creative didn't see what they had and just said, okay, well, we're not worried about it. He's not going to be much of a factor, so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And thus, unfortunately, Low-Key is now a free agent. So, hey, Cornette, you might want to pick up the phone and go find this Brooklyn native and give him something to do. Seriously. I think even WWE realizes that NXT is not worth much, although I've heard that they're doing a better job with Season 4. I haven't been watching. I did see the inaugural episode because it was in Dayton. I was there live. And I am intrigued by the new recruits. I believe Novak was the one that was eliminated this week.
Yes.
Okay, because I know that Connor wasn't going anywhere. His rat character has really taken off. Bateman, the kid that's under Daniel Bryan, has, you know, rules and rules of personality. Everybody's digging that. Byron Saxton is a natural on the mic. They've got a good crop that they can play with from Season 4. Once the dust settles from that, though, apparently the guys at the Fed have twisted some arms at USA, although I think it's Bonnie Hammer saying, Spike's having so much fun with Ultimate Fighter, with that Ultimate Fighter reality show in UFC. Hey, I remember that thing called Tough Enough you guys did back 2003.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Whose alumni include Josh Matthews and one John Morrison.
Mm-hmm.
And also a guy by the name of Nick, the one who was battling cancer.
Matt
Capitelli, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Matt Capitelli, not Nick. My sincere apologies.
That's okay. I was thinking of Nick Mitchell, who was a tough enough washout, who was the least talented member of the Spirit Squad back in 06.
But why are we bringing this up, Nikki?
Well, the Tough Enough is going to be returning shortly after WrestleMania 27. And one of the reasons I'm bringing this up is because I have it on good authority that somebody that Andy and I know very well is hoping to get on that list.
Ooh.
Andy, I don't know if you heard anything when we were at IPW last weekend, did you?
No, not that I can remember, but, I mean, you say
okay.
The name and I know I'm going to be all over it, so.
Well, I'll just go ahead and throw this out there. While I was at IPW this past weekend, I was approached by a gal who was helping out Dustin Reyes.
Ooh. There we go. I think.
Yeah. Go ahead, Andy.
Oh, no. I was going to say, I think Dustin Reyes has the in-ring ability to do pretty well on Tough Enough, although I think his mic work and his promo work is going to need a little bit more work on it. I've seen him stage cutting promos while working with IPW, and he doesn't seem to feel natural when he's cutting his you know, taped promos for the DVDs or whatnot. He seems to struggle a little bit in trying to find the words to say. But I think if he can work on that and he gets, gets probably a little bit stronger in the ring, I think Dustin Reyes, we could possibly see him as a low to mid-carder on WWE in a year or so, if that's really what he wants.
So I've got my fingers crossed for him. We don't, nothing is set in stone, but
right.
I would love to see him go, and I think everybody in the tri-state area, as in Ohio, as Indiana, and Illinois, would be right behind him.
He's a standout with
IPW. I've seen his work at Insanity Pro. I've seen his work at Heartland. I managed him briefly at Generation of Destination Wrestling. He's a wonderful guy. He's a very intelligent guy, very good worker. So, since I brought up IPW, Andy, do you want to talk about that, about the blowout show that that Mike decided to throw on New Year's Day?
Do I ever? Mike Williams came out and started talking about IPW, saying how he had received many different notices from, different friends, family, fans of IPW, competitors, saying that having a show on the first of the year is going to be a disaster because nobody's going to want to go. There was actually standing room only before intermission. The show was packed. There were some pretty big names brought in for this first show. A guy by the name of, Colt Cabana was in. And a couple guys, you might have heard of them, the Best in the World, the American Wolves, were there as well. And the show from beginning to end just sparked off and the new wave for IPW for this year. It's really showing where they're trying to go with this year. There's some really great matches. The Colt Cabana Jesse Emerson match was fantastically hilarious with a great ending. Colt Cabana losing to Jesse Emerson, Jesse getting the screw job win, the schoolboy from the ropes to get the three count, and then rolls out of the ring and runs out. And his manager, Greg Carey, stayed back in the ring area. And Colt Cabana was having none of this anymore. And so he grabs Carey by the hair, walks through the gymnasium, and throws him out the back door. One of the greatest endings and funniest endings to a match I've seen in a while. Insanity Pro Wrestling Heavyweight Championship match. A dog collar match between Jimmy Jacobs and IPW champion John Moxley. And just the two names, hearing that it was going to be a title match at all, I was drooling from the get-go. And just hearing that, it's a dog collar match as well, I could not wait any longer. The match was everything I expected it to be and then some. Jimmy Jacobs pulls out the surprising win, beating John Moxley to a bloody pulp as well. I don't think I've ever seen that much blood come from any man's head whatsoever. There was a AR Fox and Ricochet, a gigantic spot fest from beginning to end, just highly entertaining. I had friends who came in who had never been to a wrestling match before, never seen wrestling before. But they were fans of kind of the MMA scene. So they were fans of fighting, but they weren't sure, if they'd like it. And they saw the match, and they were addicted from the beginning of that match. It was just high-flying, sparks all around. It was a great match. And the final match of the night, the team of Irish Airborne, Jake and Dave Crist, former IPW champions, probably one of the best, if not the best, tag team in the Midwest area, taking on the Best in the World, the American Wolves. And that match, from beginning to end, was was just a knockdown, drag-out fight. The Irish Airborne prevailed. And we actually saw a little bit of a hint of maybe Irish Airborne in ROH in the future from the Wolves. We don't know. You know, it's, you know, obviously it's just talk coming from the Wolves themselves, but it could be exciting to see a big team like the Irish Airborne step up further to ROH.
Thank you, Andy. I'm going to throw in a couple of cute things that were going on during the show. Among them, Colt Cabana had come to the ring with his trademark towel over his shoulders and decided he was going to practice with it and was rat-tailing. Had tried to rat-tail Greg, tried to rat-tail Jesse, and he almost got our dear, dear friend, referee Brandon Toll, square in the junk with it.
Yes. That would have been funny to see.
And I got Colt during intermission. We were they were doing all the photo ops. I had gotten a couple of pics with Colt, pics with June Jacobs, and a pic with the Wolves. Colt was talking to another fan, and I was over on the wrestler side of the gimmick cables. I'd gone up behind Colt, and while he's still talking to somebody, I'm just sitting there giving him bunny ears. Not even noticing me. I'm sitting here giving him bunny ears while Bear's taking pictures of all this. Colt finally turns around and, "What are you doing back there?" And I said, something like this. And I hand him, I get the camera from Bear and I show him. He's like, "I can't believe you did that." And I said, "Well, I came back over here because my first pictures were blurry. Would you take another picture with me?" And he says, "Yeah, but I'm going to face this way." And he turns away from me.
Well played.
And while he's turned away, I'm in a position like I'm yelling at him, like, "What the hell? Where the hell do you think you're going? I'm in charge of you now." So both of those pictures will be up on my website, NikkiHayman.com, within the next few days, probably the weekend, because I'm going to be stuck at the freaking auto shop getting my picture, editing my pics from the show. But
right.
This was a fantastic show, and if you guys are ever in the Indiana area early in a month, you need to go catch up with these guys. Insanity Pro Wrestling is some of the finest wrestling in the Ohio, Indiana, Illinois area. I can't say enough about these guys. They're so good
it kind of blows, you know, all the other independent, you know, local independent promotions out of the water. Just everything that they do, even the show that may not be highly billed or may not seem like such a good show, ends up being a great show. Everything is great. They do it because they love it from beginning to end. It's you know, and it's family. It's semi family friendly. The wrestlers love the kids. They love, you know, talking to the kids, especially during intermission. They'll get pictures. They'll do everything with them. So it's not as if they ignore the fans. They love the fans. They do it for the fans. Many matches will come outside of the ring, and we'll get the fans cheering and everything. You get high fives from wrestlers in the middle of a match. I remember one match about the middle of last year. I believe it was about August or September. I was a fan at that point, and there was a match between Kyle Threat and Tim Donst, and they were just kind of heating up the rivalry. And Kyle Threat had Tim Donst's hands behind his back outside of the ring and was going up. Nikki, I think you remember this. He's going up along the guardrails, you know, trying to see how many, you know, trying to get people to hit Tim Donst. And he pulls Tim Donst up to Nikki, and Nikki's getting ready to chop him and gets held back by a mutual friend of ours. But then Kyle scoots Tim Donst over to me, and I light him up with a chest, with a chop that, you know, surprised even myself. And I got a look from Tim during the match. I was like, "Holy crap." And I talked to him after the match. I said, you know, "I'm sorry for that. You know, I'm a big fan. I kind of got heated up, you know, in the moment." He goes, "It's no problem. You know, I knew that spot was going to happen. I didn't know who was going to end up hitting me, but I knew whoever was going to do it is probably going to hurt, or they weren't going to do it right or something, but you did it right, but it hurt. And just remember, next time something like that happens, just be prepared for payback.
Ooh.
But he said it, you know, he said it in that kind of friendly way, you know, that's like, you know, just be prepared for something to happen.
Well, this was also the same show where we had Billy Rock and Kevin Thorne.
Yes.
Okay, and Billy Rock, Sunset Slip Storm, and me being an idiot, I stand up and yell, pull his pants down.
Yes, that's you being the idiot.
So they go ahead and set the spot up for me. That's more than I needed to know about Kevin Thorne.
Yeah. I just have to sort of go back to Tough Enough for a second, if you don't mind. I'm asking, how do you think they're going to differentiate it? I mean, what version, how real are they going to get? What do you think?
I would love for them to go back to Tough Enough Season 1.
Yeah.
But I don't think they'll go back that far, where they're teaching the basics,
mm-hmm.
where we actually peek behind the curtain, because I've noticed that Vince lately has been, he can't make up his mind which way he wants, does he want the curtain open or closed? How dead is kayfabe? I guess is the first question we need to answer to see where Tough Enough is going to start up.
Right. I honestly am hoping that they go back to the Tough Enough Season 1 format and really show in-depth what they have to do behind the scenes to get to the big-name statuses, the John Morrison, the Miz, you know, the John Cena, the Undertaker, that kind of status, what they have to do, how hard they have to work. Because, I mean, the show, it's called Tough Enough. Are you tough enough to be in the WWE, to be a big name? Can you do it? I would like to see that, to see how hard they push them to be that tough enough.
And with that, we're actually back on track. Let's see. I heard the name Morrison pop up, and I'm going to exercise a little bias and test my eight. I typically like to watch him, and stage a formal protest in the fact that they were not going to let him face Miz at the Rumble. Personally, you know, my personal opinion, having the False Count Anywhere match on this past week's Raw was kind of a slap in the face. Are they saying that that Morrison isn't ready for the main event picture, even though they were willing to put the title on the Miz?
That's what they're saying.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, without question, they are. And unfortunately, that's very sad because as Morrison has been showing in his matches with Sheamus and this past week with The Miz, he is main event material. I don't know why they're not pushing him to that effect.
I've heard reports, rumors, about the WWE maybe bringing in a new WWE title belt to replace the old spinner belt. I heard a news story on a pro wrestling website, WrestlingNewsSource.com, and they did a little article about how they had received some kind of insider information saying that the WWE is looking forward to replacing the spinner belt and to revealing a new belt sometime in the early stages of 2011 with The Miz possibly bringing that belt in, much like John Cena brought the spinner belt in when he first got the WWE title. So I think, you know, it'd be interesting to see if they keep Miz with the title until they possibly bring this new belt design in and then see if they drop him, you know, have the belt drop as the new belt is introduced, or if he keeps it for a little bit, or if they just don't, introduce a new belt whatsoever.
I was going to say, the belt rumor comes up a lot. We've been hearing that the spinner belt was going to be replaced as far back as probably mid-2007, and that the Big Silver ECW title was the first attempt at that. And when they got a look at it, they said, no, we don't want to use that one, but we can use it over here. So I'm kind of hoping, I think Cena himself has said the belt needs to be replaced because the aspect of Cena's character doesn't exist with what John Cena is now. It'd be nice to see a new belt. I would love them to go back to the original Eagle belt design, or, if they can come up with something, new and fancy, but probably not quite as elaborate as, say, the current Unified Tag belts, which a lot of people don't like.
No. They look like gigantic pennies, glued onto a belt.
Yeah, all the new belts
suck. You know what? That's good. That's good.
I'm hoping that somebody, I'm hoping that whoever they've got on it is going to do something that, yes, is new, but is still going to be a semi-shout-out to the Attitude Era belts or maybe even something likening closer to the WCW Big Gold.
It'd be interesting to see if they do, because of the WCW-esque Hall of Fame this year, if I'm not mistaken. It'd be interesting to see if right around Hall of Fame time they introduce the new belt and it's a WCW-esque belt. That would be something interesting to keep an eye on.
Possibly.
Chat room suggesting they bring back the Undisputed style title belt, like the one that Lesnar had when they put the two belts together back in 2002. I'd welcome that one back.
Mm-hmm.
The one that Cena essentially replaced.
Besides, what fun is a spinner belt when it can't spin?
Exactly.
Just saying out loud. No, but I agree with you, and to the point about, is it going to happen during the Miz's run? I think it is, because I don't see any way Miz loses the title until Mania at this point. And maybe after a big pay-per-view win, he's like, you know what, I'm sick of this. I want to debut a new belt, and has a big whoop-de-doo celebration over it, maybe. Something like that.
Right. I actually saw a nice little discussion argument of a friend of mine who runs the wrestling news source site between her and another of her friends, but they were discussing the Miz's, is he actually good enough for the title scene, the title belt, or is the WWE placing false hope in him? And it was very interesting to see, because I think he's got the friend had this mindset that the Miz has done nothing for the WWE, has not, done well, has not worked hard. And whereas, I personally feel like he's worked, he's worked his butt off. He's done, many different things to kind of help, to both help promote WWE, and to just make himself that guy that everyone hates.
Mm-hmm.
I personally love him. I personally love how grating he is on the fans. Alex Riley, I can't stand, but that's a completely different story. But I think Miz right now is what the WWE needs, not another Randy Orton, is he heel, is he babyface, champion. You know the Miz. He's not, he doesn't pander to the fans. He is, his character. He is who he is. And then, and if you don't like it, oh well. He's what the WWE needs in a title, in a champion.
Mm-hmm.
Just that brash, cocky, just out there kind of, hey, who gives a flying, about me? I'm the champion. I do what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And
That's just all personal, you know, musings about it, but that's where I feel that they're going with it.
I'm still not 100% a fan of The Miz, but I will call, I'm not going to sit here and eat crow either. He has improved tremendously. He has tried very hard doing what he needs to do in front of and behind the camera. A lot of stuff that he's been doing behind the scenes, he's pretty much following in John Cena's footsteps. Yeah, he's a bad guy on screen. Yeah, he's a bad guy in the ring. But he's going out there and, you know, once he had the belt in his hands, he went back and pretty much abused all of his reality show connections and roots to get his mug on TV and say, hey, you remember me? Remember laughing at me on MTV? Look at this. Look at this. It's real.
Yeah, that was annoying news.
And, you know, more power to him. More power to him. And, you know, I agree. Orton doesn't need or deserve the belt. But then again, for Orton, we usually just have one.
Baby oil!
I had to take off the headphones for that one. Oh, God.
Yeah, that's a bit. But we may have a new champion in a different division if the rumors are true.
Hmm.
Don't you think, Nikki?
Which division are we talking about?
We are talking about the women's division.
Are we not going to see Maddie anymore?
No, but we might. No, it's not that. It's that it is rumored that somebody is coming in. A very huge person is coming in.
A very awesome person?
Yes.
And we're not talking.
What?
We're not talking Ms. Awesome here.
No, we're talking big.
Beastly awesome.
Beastly awesome. And what the heck was that?
That was the Earth
the Fae. I think I just got myself in trouble with the entire show. Just
I'm sorry.
Wow. Okay. But seriously though, if this is because she has been tweeting all over the place that she signed a deal with the E.
I've seen news reports on many different sites saying that she has signed a deal and that she's actually been in talks with the E for what seems to be a couple of months at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this goes back quite a bit. This will go back as far as I've seen, you know, when I was still fairly regular on Twitter, she had gotten a bunch of compliments from Stone Cold Steve Austin, of all people. So if he's backing her, yeah, I'm sure they would say, hey, yes, we are very interested in you. And this would be beautiful in the sense that we are going to actually have wrestling women again in the Fed. We already have them in Beth Phoenix and Natalia.
But I could see a potential misuse here. A potential gigantic misuse. Especially if they do an angle with her and Mark Henry. If they go with an angle like that, and that's what I've been afraid of since hearing that she was going to be in the WWE, possibly. And I've been excited, but I've also been scared to see if they're going to go with that, you know, awesome Kong, you know, amazing Kong, whatever she goes by, and Mark Henry, you know, either, you know, together or whatever. I'm afraid of that because that's a gigantic misuse of her and her talent.
Well, I look at this. Maybe for some reason I get the feeling she might be the bodyguards of Lay Cool or something in some way, shape, or form, which would be also kind of a misuse. I think we all are getting down to the one thing. We want to see Beth versus Kong. That would be...
Yes.
Listen, if there's a case in point that a women's wrestling match could be an upper card match legitimately, that'd be it.
I'd pay money to see that.
Simply put.
Jason, you had something to add?
Not much. He's absolutely 100% correct, because Beth Phoenix is strong. Awesome/Amazing Kong, and my friend Mark Engel, who is a wrestling photographer for a Fed here on the East Coast. You might have heard of Jim called NWS, which is a local independent Fed in Jersey, which I've worked with on occasion.
Okay.
And she is the nicest person, a huge, a huge lady, and I can't wait. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be great.
Even if they do something silly with her, she won't stoop. She doesn't mind doing silly, especially when I keep seeing silly pictures, like her riding around on a tricycle or wearing a froofy yellow dress and carrying a basket. I thought that was photoshopped.
I was making her seem a little bit closer to. Hit it one more time. No,
yes, don't mind if I. No? No? No?
No.
Aww.
Yellow dress
okay.
Wearing.
Okay.
But if I could be serious for a minute.
But yeah, I mean, Awesome Kong to WWE. That's 10 shades of win right there.
Indeed.
That would make me start watching the Divas matches a lot more.
Smart, sexy, and powerful.
Yeah.
Especially powerful.
Yeah, everything is on the powerful, though, here in this case.
Yes.
And who said champion?
Speaking of the Divas, if I may interject here, anybody else notice the gigantic misuse of one Dale Kim?
Yeah.
Don't you not use? They don't use her.
And it's sad. It's, it's really sad because she was such a great, standout in TNA. And, hearing that she made the jump to WWE, kind of excited me. It was that where, okay, yeah, I'll start watching the matches again because I like watching her work. And now she's been 60 of a tag matches just to push, whatever feud is going on. And it's very frustrating and it's very annoying.
Well, I think I know where that comes in. When she was initially signed with WWE back in 2003, they really hyped her. They had very, very high expectations for her, and either she did not do a whole bunch in developmental, or she just came up not very TV ready. And yes, she has gone out and really earned her stripes. And came back to the set, so more for, just as much for money as it would be for the TV exposure. Gail Kim from that list of people who said, "Hey, I'm not taking a second job." I've got that from her personally that she was leaving. She was not making the money that she needed to make.
Mm-hmm.
But her first run was not that spectacular. And with the hype that they gave her, that I think the Fed was kind of disappointed in her. And unfortunately, Vince McMahon holds grudges. Hopefully, that'll come around sooner than later, because we really, I would really like to see Gail work more.
Yeah. She would be one of the top wrestling women in the Fed if they used her properly, but they don't.
So. Speaking of people being used, since it seems that Todd Grisham is either on his way out or is, taking interest in other pursuits, regular pay-per-view introductee, I don't know what the word is. One of the hosts for the pay-per-view pre-shows, Scott Stanford, recently showed up as a backstage interviewer on Raw.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've heard of him. He sounds good. I'm not, unfortunately, I don't know him as well as I think some of our other staff here know him. Jim.
Jim.
He's
should know this.
Jim, you should know him because he's a New York guy,
By default, I should hate him. No, I'm kidding.
Stanford's
very solid. He's a very solid guy, and unlike Adam Lee, when he came in, because you know you want to go the former sportscaster turned wrestling announcer in some form of realm, Stanford knows the product. That's big.
Exactly. And he comes off, and he has that rare ability of actually giving off a sense of presence, you know, because because the backstage interviewer is not an easy thing to do, because the last three people who were there were Grisham, Matthew. I mean, they all come off as wimpy, you know.
Yes.
Stanford comes off as a, at least the journalistic guy, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. It's the presence without overstepping the superstars.
Right.
Yeah, it's presence without cockiness, yes.
But presence and professionalism of, you know, I'm here to ask you a question and you are going to listen to me, which Grisham couldn't do, and Josh tried?
God love him, but he tried. It just didn't work. But,
now I just get up by the striker and call, so.
Yeah, but I have a funny feeling, and this is kind of a bold prediction, maybe not for 2011. I have a feeling Matthews at the Raw table is going to be a permanent thing. Not necessarily with or without Lawler. I think he could replace Lawler down the road by year's end. His work on the headset has improved tremendously. I'm high on the guy. I think he does a great job. He's a good play-by-play guy on SmackDown, although I have a feeling some of his stuff is actually taken out in post-production. Maybe that's just me. But he does do a solid job.
Well, I mean, do you think they would go for 2-3-man booths? I mean,
that's what Vince has been wanting to do. Vince, for some reason, I guess because of the Monday Night Football in him, is enamored with the concept of a three-man booth. He's tried it. Obviously, he brought one to Raw when CM Punk came aboard. And with SmackDown, same sort of deal. He's enamored with a three-man booth, which is very tough to pull off. It's incredibly tough because you have too many people fighting for not enough airspace. Kind of like here. But
we've actually been incredibly respectful, so just shut the you-know-what up, okay?
Well, you-know-what? I'm a holy kid.
We're kidding, folks. No, we're kidding. We're kidding. Sorry.
But this is why I instituted the me and three rule. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we would have the same clusters that we did with Seidelman. But so with that, with all that in place, we've got a minute left, so I don't think we're going to have time to really go into anything else like Jericho's book or the fact that there's a preview out there for Triple H's movie Chaperone. The less said about that, the better. So I'm going to throw some stuff out. Real quick, Jim, do you have any other bold predictions for 2011?
Let's see. Bold prediction for 2011. Come back to me. Go to the others.
Jason, one big bold prediction for 2011.
We are going to actually see Stone Cold Steve Austin wrestle again in 2011, I think. I think, you know, that one more match that everyone keeps asking? I think it's going to happen at WrestleMania. Just something feels, just a feeling. Could be. Never
know. Andy, what do you got?
Goldust rides off the success of his new book and rides to an Intercontinental title championship.
Oh, good, interesting choice.
I like that.
Let's see, do I have one? Wade Barrett has an A belt by summer. Jim?
I'm just going to stay with the announcer one because that's what I know most. I think Matthews becomes a permanent Raw table announcer this year. Perhaps even replacing the King permanently.
All right.
They've been phasing him out.
There you go. And Andy, we might have you back.
We would like you back. Come on
absolutely.
Back.
Absolutely. Great.
I would like to come back. Just give me the word and I'll be there.
Absolutely. We'd love to have you.
All right. Thank you very much for the show.
Absolutely. Just give us a second hand. We're in archive.
All right.
And now this is the part of the show nobody wants to listen to because it's written. No, I'm sorry.
No, that's not true. We do want to talk a little bit about SmackDown, though. We had an awesome SmackDown tonight, though. Oh,
yeah,
my.
And I'm sorry that we didn't have time to go into that, but I'll tell you, this was one of the best SmackDowns I have seen in a long time. This harkened to me during when we had single brand pay-per-views. I would always joke that the week that the off-brand didn't have a pay-per-view, something called free-per-view. Where essentially they would put on this was a free-per-view. They put on a kick-ass show. I mean, I was a little skeptical when we opened the world title match, but the last man standing match was amazing. The IC title was fun.
And we had a title change to go with it.
Oh, we did.
Mm-hmm. Boom, boom, boom.
I missed SmackDown tonight. I had a little personal night with my girlfriend, which was nice. So
there you go.
Just give it a day or so. It pops up on WWE Fan Nation through YouTube.
Do take
the time to watch it, especially for the Last Man Standing match. The 2 out of 3 falls match was very good.
Oh, it was great.
Andy, good question, Andy. Do you get Universal HD?
No, I do not.
Okay, because they rebroadcast it tomorrow night, so that would be an option, too.
Yeah.
So, oh well. Oh, yeah, YouTube it. Yep. I'll make back a question, if I could, Nikki, very quickly. Kind of piggybacking off the what you were saying about SmackDown, do you guys have a problem with how both Raw and SmackDown, well, not so much SmackDown, but how Raw was booked with the title match to start the show? Do you think that should have been saved for the end of the show, or do you think they were in the right to book it right at the top at 9 o'clock?
I think it was perfect, actually, because I'll tell you why. They were going against the Orange Bowl, remember?
Oh, yes, that's right. That's
so,
what I figured, yeah.
You got to know what TV is on there. And they were trying to get ratings. And let me see what the Raw ratings were.
If I'm not mistaken, they were akin to what they were the week before, maybe even a fraction of a decimal point down. Like 3.031-ish, if I'm not mistaken. So it was comparable.
Only reason I kind of disagreed is just the fact that it made the match too predictable for me.
Yeah,
it was a title match jerking. Morrison wasn't going to get the title, and that's another slap in the face for Jomo.
Yeah, I mean he deserves even if it's a short reign, a reign of the belt. He's improved by leaps and bounds. The only thing I can think of that they may have a qualm with giving him the belt, they don't feel he's confident enough on the mic, maybe. That's about the only thing I can think of. And he's been working on that, and he's improved a bit there, too.
What I think they should tell him to go back to his existential Zen-style promos where, you know, it's designed not to make any sense. Unlike Orton, who tries to make sense and can't.
Yeah, because he hears voices or something.
Well, it's just that Morrison is trying to sound like a poor man's John Cena, and I don't think that works for him.
I'm sorry, Nikki, I apologize. Raw did a 3-1.
Thank you.
A show did an hours of 3 and 3.13.
So we got some traffic, but yeah, Joe Mo needs to really play up the rock star and just talk out of left field. He needs to sit down, watch TMZ, or go see the Doors. He's going to be a Jim Morrison impersonator. You know, you may as well just push it all the way.
Well, without the drugs and the...
Or that would not be very PG, and we've been there before. Yes.
Yes, and yes, and I am old enough to get the reference Taz the beginning.
Yes,
I've seen her work. I know her favorite. Yeah, I'm sorry.
You have a personal favorite you'd like to share with the class?
No, I'm just going to say I know her work. Let's just go there with that.
Okay.
La la la.
We have to hear. Hey, I was trying to give you equal time because we always hear you gushing over John Morrison's abs. We can have Jason gush over Marilyn Chambers, what she used to be.
Yeah, what she used to be. Yes, yes, Miss Audrey Snow. But I like the world title being on first because it gives this sense of importance. Because if you put the world title match at the end, it's predictable. You know?
Right. Well,
The beginning of the show, though.
I would split the difference and say going into the 10 o'clock hour, make it like your first hour main event to split the difference. I mean, there were because in between the heavy, WWE Championship match and the cage match, there was much to be desired there. There truly was in many respects. You put it in at like 9:55. You got something. I mean, yeah, I understand, yeah, because of the Orange Bowl and, you know, the Stanford Cardinal and the creepy tree running around the field, as it always does. But I don't know. And obviously the ratings were about the same as they were last week, so if they were expecting a big, big spike up a tenth of a point or two, didn't happen, but they held level, so I guess they have to be happy about that, considering what they were going up against. They should have a higher rating this week, because there's no college football or pro football to go up against of any import. So
yeah, you're all Andy, you're awful quiet over there. What do you think about title matches early on?
Honestly, I think they're way too predictable. I've personally in my, I don't know, probably 15, 16 plus years of watching, you know, various wrestling, you know, WWE, WCW, TNA. You know, anytime I've seen a title match start out the show for whatever reason, any kind of title match. It could be, you know, a low card title match, a women's match, tag team, whatever. The champion always stays the same. I've almost never seen a title change hands at the beginning of a show and see where they run with it through the show, unless they had some kind of clause where it's, you know, they started off, you know, challenger wins the title, and then the champion uses his rematch clause at the end of the night and steals a victory or something like that. That's all it feels too predictable. It feels like they're not giving, you know, I mean, like the first match should be a big match, draw people in, show them what you're going to give them through the night, bring the people in. But I feel like they could almost belittle, especially the WWE title. I mean, I've heard the title described as the WWE is the face of the company, and the heavyweight championship is, you know, who is, you know, one of the best, you know, best wrestlers. Not just, you know, a good, you know, a big name, but also somebody who, you know, who works hard and can wrestle hard. And so it almost seems like they could belittle the name of the WWE championship by doing it at the beginning of the show.
And that's kind of how I feel. If you open the show with your big title match, then, you know, first of all, you don't see the title change. And then everything else just feels like an afterthought, even the number one contenders match.
Yeah, it didn't intrigue me, I'll be honest. The cage match didn't intrigue me. Then again, I don't think it intrigued me at all, especially when I heard the words Randy and Orton mentioned, because you knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
That train was never like that, I tell you, friends. I mean, come on. You're going to have a heel go up against the Miz at Royal Rumble? Yeah, right. Sure you are.
And the fact that Randy Orton's the only man I know who can phone in a cage match.
Okay, hey guys. I hate to do this, but I gotta go.
Yeah, and I think I gotta go too. We're gonna.
I kept everybody a little later than usual, but I'm glad everybody hung around. Andy, yes, you are welcome back.
Amen. Absolutely.
Good stuff, man.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, keep your mail. You'll be probably coming. I'm going to try to get you in one more time before the end of the month.
That'd be nice.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Well, nice to talk.
We will talk soon. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. No problem. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Appreciate it as always.